brought my guide's head back, turning to the right to look at me and say, "He listens well, who takes notes." Nonetheless, I took delight in gossip with Brunetto, bade him tell which of his squadron had most fame and rank, and he to me. "Of some it's well to know, of others we do best to leave a blank, for lack of time to say now, as we go, so much. But in a word, clerics they were, and great famed scholars, all of them defiled when living by the one same sin. The slur on that crowd touched the one you, as a child, learned Latin grammar from, famed Priscian, and Francesco da Corso, who taught law. And if you like scum, you might see the man sent to Vicenza by the Pope before Florence should see his sin-worn nerves collapse, Andrea de Mozzi, bishop in your youth. There's so much more to say. Not now, perhaps. I can't go further speaking the sad truth. For see, a new cloud rises from the sand. People I mustn't meet will soon arrive. My book, called Treasure, is at your command. Read it. I ask no more. There. I'm alive." He turned then, and he ran like one of those who in Verona's field race for the prize of green cloth. Like the first, the last man knows, he too will be marked out before all eyes. But this one ran, as if the race were his to win, not lose, as his life was and is. Canto 16. Already at the point where the long roar of water falling into the next loop was like the hum of beehives, I now saw three shades split at the run from their host group and come towards us, each one shouting, "Stop! You there whose clothing had its origin in our degraded city!" Ah, the crop of wounds they bore, both old and new, burned in by flames. Just to recall them grieves me still. My teacher listened to their cries, then turned to me and said, "Let's wait. To them we will do well to show respect. Though all is burned, first on the surface, later through and through, in this place by its nature, yet I'd say haste is less suitable to them than you." We stopped, and at their former quick pace they came on. And when they reached us, then all three made of themselves a wheel, in the same way that wrestlers do, nude, oiled, and keen to see advantage for their grip, their dance a sign of thrusts and blows to come. And wheeling so, each kept his face directed towards mine, wherever in the circle he might go, so that his neck moved always with his feet. "If by the sadness of the sandy waste," said one, "and by our aspect, seared by heat to hairless blackness, we ourselves are placed, along with our petitions in contempt, may our fame sway you to incline your mind to tell us who you are that walk exempt through hell. He that you see me tread behind was one, though he goes naked now and peeled, much grander than you think. Grandson of good Gualdrada, she who first raised high the shield of Conti Guidi. Be it understood that he was Guido Guerra, both with blade and wise words he did great things while he breathed. The one who stirs the sand behind me made Tegghiaio Aldobrandi a name wreathed in laurels, and he would have done the more had what he said been heeded. As for me, put here with them to this cross, I before was Jacopo Rusticucci. Let it be made clear that nothing brought me half as much grief as my savage wife." If there had been, down there among them, shelter from the touch of fire, I would have thrown myself between their bodies, and I think my teacher might have stood for it, but fear soon left for dead my goodwill. Baked and burned as black as night, too ardent an embrace. So I just said, "No, not contempt, but grief, fixed by your state so deep into my mind it will be long before it leaves. I first felt its full weight when my lord told me to expect a throng of men like you would be here. I am of your city, and your deeds and honored names always I've heard and spoken of with love. Leaving the Gaul, as I will leave these flames, I go to the sweet fruits my truthful guide has promised. But I must first go below to the center, that the soul may steer your stride, and fame shine after you, said Jacopo. Tell us if courtesy and valor yet abide in Florence, or are they quite gone? For Guglielmo Borsieri, whom we met quite recently, look there, where he goes on in fellowship with us to share the pain, afflicts us with his words. And then I cried, Florence! New men and lust for a quick gain drive you to mad excess and vaulting pride. Already you're in tears. With straining face, lifted towards my object of disdain, I yelled all this, and those three who could trace the course of my gaze had their answer. Each looked at the others as men often stare who hear the truth. If any time to teach the facts leaves you so little cost to bear, they all replied, then truly you are blessed, speaking as you desire. Therefore, if you fly free from these dark realms of the possessed, and see the beauty of the stars anew, speak well of us. The wheel was broken then, and legs in sand were nimble wings in air, so fast they flew. You couldn't say, Amen, and they were gone. My guide thought we'd been there for long enough. I followed him. We went only a little way before the sound of water would have drowned out what we meant if we had tried to speak. As at one bound that river called the Acquaceta, where it flows high up, as first to hold its course, eastward from Monteveso, where you bear left on the Apennines, before, full force, it roars over the cliff into the air at San Benedetto dell'Alpe, down to burst, and find its lower bed at Forlì, fleeced with foam again, and having done its worst, changes its name, might well have leapt at least 1,000 times there, down the cliff-like bank. Dark water boomed, so as the time increased that we spent near it. Our stunned ears grew blank. The cord I wore with which I once had planned to snare the leopard with a painted pelt, I loosed completely at my guide's command, and passed him what had been my hidden belt, now coiled and knotted. He swung to the right and flung it. Far out from the edge it went, and down into the deep pit of the night. For the strange signal, something must be meant to answer strangely, or the master's eye would not so closely follow it. Men ought to treat with caution those that clarify the deed by seeing deep into the thought that lies behind it. He to me, soon, now, what I seek and you dream of will be brought to light. It will come up. You'll soon see how. About a truth that sounds just like a lie, a man should keep his mouth shut if he can, since it will surely shame him by and by, though he be not at fault. But not this man, not here. I must speak. By the melodies of this my comedy, may they not fail of lasting favor. Reader, on my knees, I swear I saw swim upward through the stale and murky air a figure fit to stun a stout heart, as that rising one returns who went down diving to get something done about the anchor caught in the reef's ferns, or something else the sea hides. Coming near, he stretches, draws his feet in. He is here. Canto 17. Behold the beast with pointed tail, the one that breasts the mountains as he breaks through walls and weapons. He's the beast whose poison none escapes. He breathes, and soon the whole world falls into a fever. Thus my leader spoke to me, while signaling the beast to come ashore beside where the stone causeway broke off short, and that foul image of the sum of all things fraudulent slid in to land his head and chest, but left his tail out there free of the bank. His face bore not one brand beyond the stamp of justice. A fine air of grace he radiated. All the rest was serpentine. Two paws, wrapped thick with hair from wrist to armpit, and the back and breast and both flanks decorated with rich knots and peacock targets. Not Tartar or Turk ever made stuffs with colors in such lots within the weave or added on as work, nor did Arachne spider-woman lay webs on her loom like these. As sometime boats lie at the shore, part dry, part in the play of water, or the patient beaver floats its tail out from the bank to lure its prey in Germany, where gluttons rule the roost. So this vile brute lay on the rim that rings the waste of sand with stone. Its tail was loosed to roam the void, thus raising its twin stings, the lethal scorpion fork that armed its tip. My leader said, "Now we must seek the ledge that leads to where that monster keeps its grip on something solid." Thus along the edge, down to the right, we went 10 paces, well away from sand and flames. We reached his head, and I saw people. Where the sandbank fell away, who sat beyond, my master said, "That you may keep full knowledge of this zone. See how they are, but let your talk be quick. Meanwhile, with this one I will speak alone. We need his shoulders." So I had to pick my way all by myself along the rim of level 7 to the place where those sad people sat. Pain filled them to the brim, and burst forth from their eyes, which could not close. On either side their hands beat in defense, now from the flames, now from the burning sand, as dogs in summer fight the insolence of fleas and gnats and gadflies with a grand and useless dart of snout or sweep of paw. I looked at faces. Not a face I knew, as fire fell on them all. But then I saw that each neck wore a pouch of certain hue and coat of arms. They fixed their eyes on these once noble signs, and when I looked about among them, I saw various liveries. Blue lion on purse yellow I picked out, and then on purse blood red, a goose-bright white, whiter than butter, and a light blue sow, expectant on white wallet hove in sight, whose owner said, "Why are you here, and how, in this death pit? Get out, and since you live, know well that Vitaliano from my town will sit here on my left. They won't forgive those Florentines that I dared to come down from Padua. Often they pound my ears. Let Buiamonte come, the sovereign knight whose pouch bears 3 goats. Thus our years of noble deeds end with a fool's delight in lending money." As he made a face, with twisted mouth, and tongue stuck out to lick his nose like a lost ox, I, lest disgrace should fall on me, I was already sick, I should have kept it short, left this sad troop to view my back, and went to find my guide, already mounted on the huge beast's croup. "Be strong and bold. From here on down we ride on flying stairs. Get up in front of me," he said, "so I can guard you from the tail." As one so near malaria's ecstasy, of shivering that his every fingernail turns blue, and at the merest sight of shade he trembles head to foot, such I became at these words. But a servant can be made more staunch by a good master, for the shame, and so on those great shoulders I got set, wishing to say, except no voice was there to match the thought, "Now hold me, don't forget!" But he that in another time took care of me, and in another danger on the spot embraced me, ready for the air, I heard his voice behind me, "Geryon, let's move, and make your circles slow and wide as we go down. Remember your new load." And as a small boat, inch by inch, will glide backwards from where it was, so was the mode of Geryon's departure. Feeling free at last, he gently turned, until his tail was where his breast had been. Then finally he stretched the tail out. On a giant scale, it was an eel, and so it moved. His paws pulled in the air. I think no greater fear had Phaethon when his hands betrayed his cause and dropped the reins and so let the sun sear the sky where now we see the Milky Way. Nor Icarus, when he first felt his wings work loose because, too near the light of day, the wax turned soft. The man who built the things, his father shouting, "Wrong turn!" Then I knew, when everywhere I looked was only air, and all except the beast was lost to view. Slowly he swims, as if with time to spare. Slowly he wheels, and gradually descends. But I think only of the wind I face, and that wind from down there where the flight ends. Now on our right the torrent shook the base of reason with its sobbing throb, whereat I craned my neck and looked down. Then my fear increased of getting down from where I sat, for I saw flames, and heard sad cries come near, so that I shrank back, trembling. Then I saw, as not before, our circular descent against the background of a single law, expressed in all the forms of discontent. And as the falcon too long on the wing, without a sight of lure or victim, makes the falconer cry, "Come on home, poor thing," and wearily starts down, and finds it takes 100 turns to get back to the spot it left so swiftly, and lands in a sulk and angry near its master, and yet not all that near, Geryon, in his great bulk, at last had set us down on the deep floor, close to the jagged rock's base, then set free of my weight, with no orders any more from my guide, like an arrow finally let loose to fly. He vanished instantly. Canto 18. Now Malebolge is a place in hell, all iron-colored stone, just like the wall that goes around it. And a wide, deep well gapes in the middle of its foul field. All the workings of that pit I shall expound in due course. But for now, let's say the belt between it and the high rock bank is round, with 10 concentric valleys, each a welt sunk in the earth. As where moat after moat guarding the castle makes ring after ring, and scored ground shows a plan that we can note, the general layout here was the same thing. And as such forts have bridges from their gates to the outer bank, so from the rock's base run ridges from dike to dike to where awaits the pit that cuts them short, providing one point of collection. Dropped by Geryon from his back, there we were. My leader held tight to the left, and I behind came on. On our right hand new kinds of anguish welled, new torments, new tormentors, with this tide the first ditch brimmed. The sinners on its floor were naked. They came facing us, this side of center. On the other side they bore in our direction, but with longer stride, just as in Rome the year of Jubilee. The crowds of pilgrims on the bridge were split, so those on one side as they crossed could see the castle and were always facing it as they approached St. Peter's, while those on the other walked towards the hill. But here, along the sad rock, they were set upon, on both sides by horned demons. From the rear each victim felt a huge whip at the task of cruel encouragement, and flicked his heels at the first stroke. Nobody had to ask for a second or a third, though such appeals would have been granted. As I went, my gaze was met by one of them. Quickly I said, "I saw enough of him once." To appraise him further, I slowed down, and he who led allowed me to turn back a bit. And that afflicted soul believed he could conceal himself by lowering his face. But at the vain attempt I said, "You just reveal yourself by doing that, for I still know, unless my eyes deceive me, the true face of Venedico Caccianimico. But what brings you to this sour, pickled place, so like the ditch where dead outlaws are thrown near your Bologna?" And he answered, "I say this with bad grace, but your speech so plain recalls the old world, so I must comply. The Marquis d'Este got his chance to gain Gisola Bella only with my aid. Yes, I played pander with the helpless bait of my own sister. Thus the deal was made. However, now my countrymen relate the vile tale, and I'm not the only soul once of Bologna now lamenting here. This place is full of them, Not in the whole city between two rivers are such sheer numbers of tongues that speak our dialect. And if you want the proof, recall to mind our avaricious spirits and reflect. And even as he spoke, hard from behind, a demon hit him with a whip and cried, "Go, pimp! There are no women here to trade!" I joined my escort, and with him to guide, soon came to where a ridge formed an arcade out from the bank. We climbed up there with ease, turned right along the crags, and left that gang to their perpetual circularities. When we were at the dizzy overhang, above the trench for those beneath the lash, my leader said, "Stop here. Take in the sight of yet another form of ill-born trash. Faces you've not yet seen in the right light, because they walked with us and not towards. From the ancient bridge we watched them as they came towards us on the other side, the hordes lashed onward like the first lot just the same." My poet said unprompted, "It's him! Look! That great one, who weeps not for all his pain, is Jason, who by craft and courage took the golden fleece from Colchis, the rich gain its men all lost. Lemnos he left behind, whose women bold and callous gave their men to death, and where he played upon the mind of Hypsipyle with soft words and then again with trinkets, she who had beguiled the other women when they wished to slay her father, and she now was left stark wild with grief and pregnant as he sailed away. This torment fits his guilt. Medea, too, is here avenged, for he gulled her as well. And with him go all those deceivers who do likewise. And let this be all we tell of this first valley and those in its jaws." Now we were where the narrow pathway cuts across the second dike and thus ensures support for the stone arch the dike abuts. Here we heard people moaning in the next crevasse. With shouts they snorted, while they slapped themselves with open hands. Their cruelly vexed exhaling grew a moldy crust that wrapped the banks, repellent to the eyes and nose, the depth so hollow that it can't be seen, save when the arch's crown is climbed, which lies the furthest out above that sad ravine. We went up there, and in the ditch below, where people plunged in the cloacal slime of human privies, far too thick to flow. And as I scanned the filth, taking due time, I saw one with his head so fouled by shit I couldn't tell if it was shaved or not. "Layman or cleric?" he cried. "Why is it I catch your greedy eye more than this lot stuck in their slop?" My turn. "Because I know that head. If I'm right, I've seen you before, with clean hair. If you are Alessio Interminei, that's why I eyed you more than all the rest." Then he beat on his crown and cried, "See how my flatteries have cloyed, that while I lived could never drag me down?" And then my guide, "Lean out into the void a touch more, and you'll get a better view of that foul ragbag female horror's face. Squatting or standing, either of the two, she always scratches some disgusting place with filthy nails. Behold Thais, the whore, whose client asked her if he was dear to her. She flattered him, 'I couldn't love you more,' and made a clown out of a customer." We've seen that flattery is filthy stuff. Let's say for now that we have seen enough. Canto 19. Now Simon Magus and his acolytes, you wretches who for silver and for gold made strumpets of the things of God by rights the brides of righteousness, all you that sold the priceless, now the trumpet sounds for you here in the third pouch. We were now at the next tomb, on that high part of the new rock ridge that hung above the ditch. But how, wisdom supreme, how great the art you show in perfect heaven and on evil earth, how justly portioned out your power! So I saw along the sides and in the girth of that grim ditch's floor a livid stone with holes in it, the holes all the one size and each one round. One size and shape alone had all the founts, it seemed to my fond eyes, in my lovely church St. John. And one of those I broke when helping someone out who would have drowned, and this I swear to foreclose all further rumors that I meant no good. From each hole's mouth a sinner's feet stuck out, and legs up to the calf, the rest inside. All had both souls on fire. Joints thrashed about with such force that a willow lashing tied around them would have snapped, a rope the same. As flame on oily things moves over just the surface, so it was here with this flame, playing from heels to toes. "Master, I must know this," I said. "That one who's writhing there, more even than his fellows, who is he, licked by a redder fire?" "If you should care," he answered, "to be lifted up by me, and carried down by that more stony bank, you'll hear from him of who he is and what he did." And I, "All that to you whom I most thank is pleasing suits me well, for I do not, you know, my lord, depart from what you will. Also you know what I don't say." Then we were on the fourth dyke, turned left, went downhill to the pitted narrow floor, and he set me down from his hip when finally we faced the whole of him who with his shank swept most. "Whoever you may be who are so placed," I said, "sad soul, heels overhead, a post well planted, speak now if you can." Just as the friar that shrives the sneaking killer, who, the job done, calls him back and thereby has further delay before death, I stood too and listened as he cried, "Already here, Boniface? Is it you that's standing there so early? 3 years more, or pretty near, the writing said you'd take to get here. Where was truth in that? So soon you're satisfied, with all you did not fear to take by guile from our Lady Beautiful and then bestride her prostrate holiness. So short a while, your stolen splendor fed your hungry pride." Like those who stand as if they might be mocked by some reply they don't quite comprehend and can't reply themselves, they are so shocked. So I became. And Virgil said, "Quick, mend his error. Say, 'Be sure I am not he. He isn't here.'" As I was asked, I spoke. At which the shade's feet in their agony twisted together, and he sighed and broke into a sob and said, "What do you seek with me, then? If to know my name concerns you so much that you came down here to speak with me direct, behold, here writhes and burns a pope. The mighty mantle I once wore as Nicholas the Third, although in truth the she-bear sign was what I wore before, a son of the Orsini. Our clan's youth was my chief cause. The whelps brought out my worst. From them I stacked my wealth. Here I am stacked. Below my head are others who went first in simony, and where the rock is cracked are through those fissures now dragged down, squashed flat. And down there I will go too in my turn, when he for whom I so mistook you that I asked a hasty question comes to burn at long last. Longer still, though, is the time already that I've been here upside down with roasted feet than he for his great crime will spend with red feet planted. Our same crown will fall to Clement of yet fouler deeds. He'll be that lawless shepherd from the west, as bad as both of us, just as one reads in the Maccabees of Jason and his best bid for the priesthood, which the king forgave, prepare for the new Jason, favored by the king of France, to buy and sell the bread of life." I can't be positive that I was not too bold, when everything I said in answer was as strict as this. "How much did our Lord ask, pray tell, in treasure when he gave the keys to Peter? Was there such a thing as price? No. All that he asked then was, 'Follow me.' Nor did Matthias pay the others when he took the vacant place of Judas, self-condemned. So here you stay, well punished, pondering the long disgrace of what you charged for boldness in that plot against Charles of Anjou. and I should heap yet harsher words upon you, were it not that reverence for the keys you got to keep in the glad life forbade me. Lust for gain, like yours, saddens the world, tramples the good, exalts the wicked. You ruled in the brain, bad shepherds, of the one who understood the apocalypse. I mean the evangelist, who wrote of her that sits on water, seen committing fornication with a list of kings, that harlot who had been born with the 7 heads, her strength obtained from 10 horns for so long as her bridegroom thought pleasure was a virtue. You thieves reigned, making a god of gold and silver. Room does not exist between the idolaters and you, except they worship 1, and you 100. Constantine, you set the spurs to evil, not by cleaving to your new religion, but by how, when you moved east, you gave Sylvester, just to stay behind, the Western Empire's wealth. He never ceased while I sang him this song. Whether his mind was chewed by anger or remorse, to kick out hard with both feet. I believe, indeed, it pleased my guide, who clearly could not pick 1 fault of fact as I spoke. I could read the pleasure in his eye. Then he took me in both arms, I was lifted to his breast, and up we went the way we came, and he tired not of holding me. Back to the crest of that arch from the 4th to the 5th dyke he carried me clasped close, and then he set me gently down for what that ridge was like, rugged and steep, rough as few goats have met, and there beyond, another valley yet. Canto 20. It's Book 1, Canto 20. I must make new matter and new verses from the pain of those in these depths, where the floor's a lake of anguished tears I stare at tight with strain. Seeing them come along the valley's curve, these silent people weeping, at the pace of worldly litanies, I needed nerve even to notice there below each face the twist between the upper chest and chin. The head faced the behind, and thus they came reversed so as to see in front. If in some case of palsy it had been the same, a man turned right around. I have not seen such things, nor do I think they can be true. So God grant, reader, you yourself should glean fruit from your reading, and think how I knew to keep dry cheeks when I saw from close by the human form so twisted that its eyes could bathe with tears its rearward cleft. And I wept indeed, held up in my surprise by 1 rock of the ridge. My escort said, "You're witless as the rest. Here pity dwells, but only when it's absolutely dead. Who is more guilty than he who by spells and mysteries make it seem as if divine judgment were subject to his will? Raise, raise your head. The earth, like a collapsing mine, once opened up beneath this one in days of old. The Thebans saw it, shouting, 'Where do you rush off to, Amphiaraus? Why do you quit the fight and take the air?' A question he did not stay to discuss, but plunged straight down till he was in the care of Minos, who looks after everyone. See how his shoulders make a breast, he that would see so far ahead and now is spun, if he would reach what he is looking at, around to see behind while he goes back towards his front. And see the soothsayer, Tiresias, who gave 2 snakes a crack with his staff for their coupling. But they were revenged when all his features changed from male to female. He, transformed in every part, must strike again those twined snakes without fail before he could resume his manly art. And backed up to his paunch as Aaron's. 'Hail Caesar,' the entrail said, which came to be. In the hills of Luni, where the ground is tilled by those who come up from Carrara, he once had a cave, as if it had been drilled through the white marble, and from there his view of sea and stars was boundless. And look there, at her whose breasts have been concealed from you by her long hair thrown back, and her short hair is also at the back. She is Manto, Tiresias's daughter. Many a land she's searched through. Finally, she chose to go where I was born and settle. Understand, on this you should know some of what I know. After her father died, Thebes had the brand of slave. She roamed the world for many years, high up in Italy, in the foothills of the Alps that fence the Tyrol when it nears the German lands. There Lake Benaco spills 1,000 springs. There could be more by far. Of gathered rain that bathe the Apennines, from Garda south to Valcamonica. And in the center a sweet spot combines, or would combine if they just went that way, the blessings from all pastors out of Trent and Brescia and Verona. To dismay, the Brescians and an army sent from Bergamo, a strong and handsome fort, Peschiera, at the low part of the shore, lies waiting, and there all that can't stay, caught in the bosom of Benaco forth, must pour, and then become a river, flowing down through green fields. Now its name is Mincio, and on it runs as far down as the town called Governolo, and so to the Po. And finally it finds a level, slows, and spreads to make a marsh, in summer more a bog that sometimes violates the nose. Passing that way, the deadly virgin saw land in the fen, untilled, unpeopled. Keen to shun all human concourse, there she stayed with her assistants, which could only mean she'd found the place to ply her arts. She laid her bones there. Afterwards, from all around, the people gathered, for that spot was strong, the bog on every side, and on that ground and those dead bones that searched the world so long, they built the city, and from her who first picked out its place, they gave the place a name. They called it Mantua, to slake all thirst for augury. It rests upon her fame. There used to be more people there before that prize dupe Casalodi led his clan be tricked away by Pinamonte. More, much more of how my city's life began there is to tell you. But for now, that much will serve to arm you against false reports. And I said, Master, this account holds such assurance for me, and so meets my thoughts, all others would be embers, but now teach of these that pass. Of which ones have I read? Such is the satisfaction I beseech. Then he, the one whose beard contrives to spread across his swarthy shoulders from his cheeks, was augur for a Greece devoid of males, even in cradles. Therefore his name speaks, along with that of Calchas, for the sails launched by the cable cut in Aulis. Yes, Eurypylus, the very one. I sing of him in my high tragedy, but less of that now, for you know it, the whole thing. That other one, so skimpy in the loins, was Michael Scott, named for his land of birth. He knew the game of disappearing coins. Guido Bonatti, whose star charts were worth their weight in gold, which his duke gladly paid. Asdente, toothless soothsayer, said sooth he'd sooner now have forgone, like his teeth, and made more shoes his trade and only truth. And see those wretched women stream beneath who gave up needle, shuttle, distaff, thread, and turned to telling fortunes, brewing spells with herbs and dolls. But come, for Cain's white head of thorn now proves what no black art foretells. With both the hemispheres confined, the waves below Seville shine silver, and last night the moon was round. It's certain your mind saves the memory, which sometimes eased your plight deep in the wood. And so, with much to say of lawful forecasts, we went on our way. Canto 21. From bridge to bridge, talking of other things of which my comedy declines to sing, we came to a high point. Of all the rings of Malebolge, this was the next ring. The next incision and the next vein tears, and it looked strangely dark. The arsenal of Venice boils a pitch when winter nears. Viscous, to caulk cracked ships and seal the hull. In winter they can't sail. Instead, by one, a new ship's built, another plugs the ribs of his that often sails, and something's done to this prow with a hammer, and that jib's patched up, and ropes are twisted, and astern has some new post set upright while they stitch a mainsail's edge. Just so, not from a churn of fire, but by divine art, a thick pitch was boiling down there, which struck to the bank on every side. I saw it, but in it saw only how the bubbles rose and sank, swollen by boiling, settling in the pit. While fixedly I gazed down there, my guide said, "Watch out! Watch out!" drawing me to him from where I stood. Then I turned to one side like someone keen to see what is so grim he must escape it, and is unmanned quite by sudden fear, and even while he still keeps looking, does not think to stay his flight, because that urge does not wait for his will. And I saw, running up the ridge behind, a black devil. How savage was that face! How fierce his action seemed to my stunned mind! The open wings, the light tread, and in place around his shoulders, that were sharp and high, a sinner sat, held firmly by the feet. From our bridge the black goblin gave the cry, "You, evil claws, here is your chance to meet a grand old man of Lucca's ruling thieves. You stick him under, I'll go back for more. That city teems with them, and each believes in Baratri as if graft were the law, except, of course, Bonturo, still deemed clean up there where cash may conjure yes from no. They call him straight, that bunch. What can they mean?" The imp flung down his load and turned to go. Having addressed an audience unseen, he left the ridge of flint in greater haste than any mastiff sent after a thief. The load went under, by the pitch embraced, then popped up, doubled up, but no relief was offered by the imps we couldn't see below the bridge. "The holy face," they cried, "of your cathedral isn't here to be your comfort, and the swimming in this tide is not your river Serchio. Unless you want our hooks, stay down there in the pitch." 100 probing gaffs helped to express their theme. "Dance under cover in the ditch, and if you have to steal, steal out of sight." Just so, cooks made their scullions shove the meat down in the pot so it can't come to light. My master then to me, "To keep discreet your presence here, crouch down behind a rock for shelter, and from outrage offered me by anyone, you should not suffer shock. I've seen these things. It's not a novelty." He went on past the bridgehead, and when he came on to the sixth bank, he soon had need to show a firm front. With the spitting hate and uproar of a pack of dogs that speed from out of nowhere so the beggar's state of trance is not enough and he must plead, these rushed out from beneath the bridge and drew their hooks on him. But he cried, "Let there be no foolery from any one of you. Before you catch me with a fork, let's see just one of you come forward that will hear from me, and then decide what's to be done about me and those hooks." Though they were near, they stopped and cried, "Let Bobtail be the one." So while the rest stood still, one moved. "What good?" we heard him say. "Will this do him?" My guide. "You think Bobtail. Somehow I safely could have come this far through everything your side could throw against me, and not have the aid of God's will and propitious fate. Now let us pass, for the decision has been made above, that I show one you haven't met the savage path." Less insolent, the imp let fall his fork to clatter at his hooves, and told the rest of them, his voice gone limp, "He can't be touched." My guide, "I think that proves you that's sitting crouching in the rock somewhere. If you come back to me, you will be safe." At which I rose, and with no time to spare, I joined him, as I watched the devils chafe at being still, a state they cannot bear. They came on at a clip that made me fear they might not keep their promise. Thus one time I saw troops less than eager to appear among their enemies. They feared a crime, as they, out of Caprona, moved unarmed, protected only by a guarantee. Similarly afraid of being harmed, I pressed close to my guide. All I could see was how they looked, which wasn't good, while they leveled their prongs, one saying, "Shall I touch him on the rump?" I heard another say, "Sure, let him have it." But this seemed too much for my guide's interlocutor, who swept sharply around and said, "Hold, Ragtag, hold!" Then he to us, "To keep the path you've kept by this ridge is impossible. The old sixth archway fell and lies in bits below. But if it is your pleasure to go on along the rocky dike. Not so far off from here there is another ridge which grants a passage. Trust me, the time nears. 5 hours from now, minus one day, the bridge has lain there broken for 1,200 years and 66 more, when the world entire was shaken by one passion on one hill. Some of this company goes to inquire at my behest, if there be those who will be out to take the air. Go with them. None among them will molest you. Forward now, scumbag and scallywag, go get it done. And you, dirtbag, and you can show them how to do it, Tanglebeard. Let you go too, dog-breath and blatherskite, and you, pig-face, with useful tusks, and hairball, let's have you, and gutter-snipe and snot-nose, search the place. Check on the boiling tar, and let these through safely as far as the next ridge that goes intact across the ditches all the way." I said, "My master, what I see, who knows? If you know how to get there, let us, pray, go there alone. An escort we don't need, and if we did, as cautious as you are, would you pick troops of this particular breed? See how they grind their teeth and threaten far more mischief for us yet with how they knit their brows." And he to me, "It is the lot of those down there, how they can worsen it, that makes them fierce. So you need fear them not. Just let them grind, and dodge the chips they spit." Before they marched away on their new route, around the dike there on the left they wheeled, poking their tongues out in a long salute, a tribute to their captain in the field. He turned, bent down, and as he watched them pass, he hailed them with the trumpet of his arse. Canto 22. I have seen horsemen ride before today. They moved camp, they rode out to the attack, they mustered up, and sometimes rode away, flat out in flight, and they did not come back. So, Aretines, I've seen scouts on your land, and raiding parties ride, and seen the clash of tournaments and running jousts, a band of trumpets here, bells there, and then the smash of drums and signals from the castle walls, flags that I knew, flags that were new to me. But never horsemen moving to the calls of such a strange horn, no, nor infantry, nor ship that sailed by landmark or by star. With these 10 demons, savage entourage indeed we went, but you know how things are. Pray with the saints, drink with the sots. At large my gaze roamed on the layout of the moat, each detail of the pitch and all who burned. Like dolphins when they signal men afloat to save the ship by how their backs are turned above the wave-tops and the men take note, so now and then a sinner would arch high his spine to ease the pain, then hide again as quick as lightning. And as frogs will lie still in the ditch of a water's edge or fen, with just their muzzles out, the bulk of their fat bodies out of sight, not just their feet, just so the sinners, noses in the air, were otherwise unseen, but full retreat came only when foul Tanglebeard trod near. And down they went beneath the boiling black. I saw, and still my heart skips from the fear, as when the frogs all dive yet one holds back, one lingering soul, and dog-breath from close to, hooked him by his tarred hair and pulled him out just like an otter. I already knew the names of all the imps, from the first shout when they were chosen, and from what they'd called each other since. "Dog breath, make sure you get your prongs right in there. Get some skin," they bawled, in unison, those damned beasts, and worse yet. "Master," I said, "please tell me, if you can, who this poor wretch is, helpless in the hands of enemies?" My leader asked the man, who said this, "In that loveliest of lands, the kingdom of Navarre, there I was born. My mother put me out to serve a lord, for she had borne me to a wastrel, sworn foe to himself, who reaped his just reward, insolvency. The household of good King Thibault was home to me, and there I gave myself to barratry. The reckoning I pay in the thick heat of this black grave. And then Pigface, his mouth armed like a boar's with twin tusks, stuck one into him and ripped. One mouse and many cats, their wicked paws, for Tanglebeard now held him firmly gripped and said, "Stand back and let me have him." Then, "Ask him," this to my guide, "if you would learn more from him before he gets shredded when another of my soldiers takes his turn." Therefore my leader said, "Tell us of those others beneath the pitch. Are any there Italian?" He, "Just now, from one that knows them well, I parted. Now I'd like to share that black redoubt with him again, no threat from claw and hook." And Slimeball said, "That's it, we've had enough," and gaffed his arm to get a muscle free to take like a tidbit, as Guttersnipe aimed low between the legs, whereat their captain, with an ugly look, wheeled on them all, so even they, the dregs, looked almost as if they'd been brought to book, at which my master quickly asked the man, who still gazed at his wound, "But who is he, the one you parted from, as you began to say, so as to land unluckily on this shore?" And he answered, "It was Fra Gomita, from Galura, of all fraud, in each department, the undoubted star. Within his grasp the worst foes of his lord were so adroitly managed, even they spoke well of him." He said, "I took the cash, and they went quietly. In every way, in all affairs, no fuss, and nothing flash. No petty crook, he was a sovereign cheat. Don Michael's Anche keeps him company. The Don's from Logodoro, so they meet on common ground to talk incessantly about Sardinia." I could say more, but look at that one grind his teeth. I fear he wants to scratch my scurf and make it sore. Their general turned to Slimeball, standing near, with rolling eyes and poised all set to strike. "Get out of here," he ordered, "dirty bird." "If," said the frightened spirit, "you would like to see or hear of those from Tuscany or Lombardy, I'll bring some here, but get these evil claws to stand back, lest they be a source of fear to those who come. Now let me stand alone and whistle from this spot, and I, just one, will summon seven. So our custom goes when one among our lot gets out." And Dirtbag's cruel face answered, "No," with lifted snout and shaking head. Aloud he said, "This is a trick of his, to throw himself down," at which he so well endowed with stratagem said, "Yes, I am indeed a trickster, making trouble for my friends." But Dirtbag, though the rest paid the man heed, could not hold back and threatened, "This truce ends if you go down. I will come after you, not galloping, but beating with my wings across the pitch. Now what we ought to do is get down off this peak and settle things against the dike. We'll see if, on your own, you more than match us." Reader, listen now to news of a new sport. He stood alone, with all the demons watching to see how he might jump, and the foremost was the one who'd been the least persuaded. From their dike they watched him, but as he had always done, man of Navarre, he chose his time to strike. Planting his feet, he made a sudden leap and left the marshal standing. They were all consumed with self-reproach, but none could keep his anguish hidden less than he whose call to let the quarry jump had wrecked the game. So he went first and cried, "You're caught!" to no avail, for wings, though quick, are not the same as terror. Down the prey went, and just so the hunter went up with his lifted breast, as instantly the wild ducks go below, and the falcon, vexed at having done its best without result, climbs back where it began with broken spirits. Guttersnipe, annoyed at being tricked, but keen to hunt a man. The disappointment left him overjoyed, flew after him, and when he disappeared, turned on Dog Breath, right there above the ditch, and clawed him. But hawk's claws are to be feared, and this hawk was full grown. Into the pitch they fell together. Bubbling heat soon seared them free from one another, but they stayed stuck in the glue that had weighed down their wings, till Tanglebeard, sad as the others, made four of them fly across the taint that clings to the far bank, and each with practiced haste, armed with his fork, as if this were a drill, came in to land and was correctly placed on this side or on that. Then, to fulfill the task, they pushed their gaffs out to the pear, baked in their crust. We left them cooking there. Canto 23. Wordless, alone, without an escort, we went on. One walked behind the one ahead, as minor friars do. Insistently, my thoughts were driven by these scenes of dread, to Aesop's fable of the frog that tricked the mouse into the stream and dived to drown the mouse, but when the mouse splashed, the kite picked the frog for its next meal and hurried down. And both tales, for what happened at the start and end, were just the same, the one aligned with the other, and fear doubled in my heart, just as the stories echoed in my mind. It is by us, I thought, that they are fooled. By injury and insult they are vexed. Add anger to ill will, and they are ruled by double passion to make us their next objective, as if they, more savage still than any dog, snapped at the leveret. Already my hair bristled at the thrill of fear, and so I stood with my stare set intently back and said, "Master, unless you quickly hide us both, I am afraid the evil claws will catch us. I confess, I hear them make again the noise they made when they thrived on a fugitive's distress." And he, "Were I a mirror, I could not receive your outer image sooner than your inward now. Your thoughts make common lot with mine in guise and action, so one plan I make of both. If that slope on the right leads down into the next ditch after this, we'll slip the hunt that haunts you in your fright." His plan acquired an urgent emphasis while he was still explaining it, for here they came, with outstretched wings. They were intent on taking us, and they were very near. My master took one look at them and bent to pick me up, just as a mother would, who wakes to hear the noise and see the fire and picks the child up, thinking of its good above hers, as she flees with no attire, even a shift, because time equals hope. Down from the stone-high ridge, flat on his back, he let himself slide on the rocky slope this side of the next ditch. At such a crack, never ran water coursing through a sluice to turn a mill-wheel nearest to the blades, as my guide did when he went fast and loose down that steep bank, and through the dry cascades he bore me on his breast more as a child than a companion. Hardly had his feet touched down on the deep bedrock when that wild platoon was on the height above to meet their fate made manifest. For the same high authority which gives them wings to guard the fifth ditch has decreed they shall not fly beyond it. They knew that, but took it hard. We found a painted people there below, who circulated looking tired and sad. They seemed defeated, and their steps were slow. In cloaks with cowl drawn forward they were clad, to hide their weeping eyes, cloaks of the kind that Cluny monks wear, but these shone with gold, as if to dazzle they had been designed. Within, though, they were led in every fold, so heavy that those Frederick liked to see, wrapped melting around traitors, were mere straw. A tiresome mantle for eternity. We turned, still going left just as before, along with them as they preoccupied, with weeping went, but weary with their load, they had to go slowly every stride of ours along that populated road, brought us new company. Therefore I said to my wise leader, "Can't we, as we go, Find someone among all these walking dead whose deeds we've heard of or whose names we know. And one caught by my Tuscan accent called out after us, Slow down and get some rest. You that so hasten through this air appalled with dusk, perhaps you'll get what you request from me. At which my leader said, Let's wait, and go on at his pace. I stopped, and saw a couple who seemed in the mental state to join us quickly, but their bodies bore that load, and it was crowded on the way. When they came up, each of them gazed a while, sideways at me and silent, and then they spoke to each other. This one has the style of the alive. The workings of his throat a sure sign, and if both of them are dead, by what rare privilege are they free to walk, thus unencumbered by the cloak of lead? And then to me, Tuscan, we know your talk. You that have come to where the hypocrites assemble their sad faces tired and worn, from faking a sincerity that fits their story, tell us yours, where were you born? And I to them, where the fair Arno flows, in that great city I was born and raised. My soul is still contained in what it knows, this body mine from birth. Be not amazed, but tell me who you are, for whom such pain distills itself and dribbles down each cheek. What penalties drench you in golden rain? So heavy you can hear each balance creak. These yellow cloaks are lead, one answered me. One Guelph, one Ghibelline, we are the two jovial friars of Bergamo. You see the saviors of your city facing you, I, Catalano, Loderingo he, both chosen by your council to bring peace where one man alone fulfilled that role, and the Gardingo district won't soon cease to say how well we did it on the whole. Thinking of what they stole, and where once stood the Uberti Palace, Friars, your mad pride, I said, but said no more of what I would, for when I saw one lying crucified by three stakes in the ground, he saw me there, and writhed all over, blowing on his beard with sighs, and Catalano saw me stare, and said, That one who lies there, three times speared, is Caiaphas, who told the Pharisees one man should do a people's suffering. Stretched naked on a crowded pathway, he's well placed to feel the weight of everything that comes along, as you can see. The same for Annas, in this ditch put to the rack, his mother's father, and for every name on that black list to which the Jews trace back their troubles. Yes, I mean the Sanhedrin. Then I saw Virgil standing there nonplussed, above the one stretched vilely crosswise in external exile. What you have discussed, he told the friar.